Today, we welcome in the second NCO onto the Leaders Huddle podcast. This episode features a discussion primarily focused for our new lieutenant and platoon leader listeners. Through our talk today with Sergeant First Class Harlan Kafalas, we provide a unique look into the platoon leader, platoon sergeant relationship through the lens of an NCO. This is the Leaders Huddle podcast, episode 17, What Platoon Sergeants Expect of Platoon Leaders. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I am Captain David Wirt, your host for today's episode. With me today co-hosting this episode is Captain Mike Eisenlohr. Our guest today is Sergeant First Class Harlan Kafalas. He is a truck driver, an 88 Mike, with over 17 years of military service. He has served in a variety of leadership positions to include squad leader, platoon sergeant, battalion, S3, and COIC. His deployments include Kosovo, Iraq, and Afghanistan. He is currently assigned as a master driver of the White House Transportation Agency. He is a lifelong student of leadership, whose articles have been featured on the militaryleader.com blog, as well as the Task and Purpose website. He is also the chief financial officer of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. He holds a bachelor's degree in applied social sciences from Colorado State University, and is currently working on his master's degree in organizational leadership from Fort Hays State University. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle podcast, Sergeant Kafalas. Thank you for being here. Tell us a little more about yourself and fill in a little about your bio.
All right. First, I'd like to say thank you, and it's an honor to be able to contribute to a professional discourse. One of the things I've come to realize over the course of my career is that the officer-NCO relationship is probably the most important one in the Army. It's a mutual relationship, and that's something I've discovered over the course of my career. I've spent time in airborne units, tank units, armor units, and a little time in transportation unit, as well as served as a drill sergeant, which was the most challenging and rewarding time of my career. And right now, I'm assigned to the White House Transportation Agency and provide worldwide logistics support to the Executive Office of the President. One of the benefits to that is that I have plenty of time to think and reflect on what I've done so far. And I've really been inspired by some of the people you've had on before, Drew Stedman, Joe Byerly, Nate Finney, and just the wealth of people all out in the blog sphere and social media trying to make the professional discourse or discussion about what it means to be a professional and developing yourself and others out there. And I'm just honored to be included in that group.
Yeah, we're definitely excited to have you. You're one of the first or few NCOs that I've really seen that has taken upon themselves to write more and contribute to that discourse. So when you proposed the topic a few months ago on my Twitter feed, I wanted to jump at the opportunity. So moving into setting the context for our discussion, as officers, we go through our various commissioning steps, and we receive a cacophony of advice on meeting our first platoon sergeant and or how to counsel them. Most often this advice comes from other officers. So like I said, when you propose a topic for today's discussion, we want to jump at the opportunity to hear from an NCO's perspective on that side of the relationship. We're looking forward to the discussion today, and I think that what you've prepared will add a lot of value, specifically to lieutenants out there. So without belaboring the point, let's dive right in.
Hey, Sergeant Kafalas, this is Captain Mike Eisenlohr. You know, as new officers, we have a lot of basic schooling in tactics, techniques, and procedures for accomplishing our branch-specific missions. And yet, most of us know almost nothing about the traditions and culture of the units that we're joining, especially our role in unit functions outside of the typical duty day. What are the types of functions that you and your lieutenants can expect to attend, and what advice do you have for them?
Depending on the unit, a unit has different functions. I was fortunate to be in a cavalry unit where we have great cavalry balls and other events such as the holiday Easter party, a lot of monthly leadership professional development where all the platoon leadership get together and drink beer and talk about things. But I think the family readiness group and other more soldier-oriented things are maybe overlooked by lieutenants. Chances are the battalion commander, company commander will prioritize the leader development sessions and make those more important and maybe de-emphasize, or especially if they're a young single lieutenant right out of college or West Point, they may not see the need to attend a family readiness group. But in my opinion, it's one way to really build that bond, one with your NCOs and the other with your soldiers and their families, so you can understand where your soldiers are coming from if there's a discipline issue or something like that. And as the platoon leader, you should be setting the example for your soldiers. I had a first sergeant tell me when I was a young sergeant that there are times when, you know, you're going to ask something of the unit, from the unit, whether it's going to a school or something like that. And if your attendance at those unofficial or not mandatory functions may sway opinion one way or another. And as a platoon leader, myself as a platoon sergeant, we need to set the example for our soldiers, because if in our busy schedules we can make the time to attend those events, then they should have no excuse not to.
I think that that's absolutely fantastic advice and spot on. You mentioned setting the example by attending. I was wondering if you would be able to expand, maybe if you have any advice on maybe conduct and dress, maybe specifically at like a unit ball. What are the do's and don'ts for a lieutenant at their first unit ball?
I would check to see what time it is. There are rules about 6 o'clock and wearing headgear and ties and shoulder brassards, and that's something they're hopefully the platoon sergeant squares them away with. And other than that, I would say act professional and don't do anything you would be ashamed to do in front of your mother at a function such as that, because I've seen bad things happen because of the overindulgence of alcohol, and it's not pretty the next morning when that lieutenant figures out what he did or is told what he did in front of the battalion or brigade commander. Because generally, in my experience, every cav ball I went to had a 2-star general in attendance as the guest of honor. So that's someone you really don't want to be immature in front of.
So I think that's pretty sage advice as far as don't do anything in front of you wouldn't want your mother to see. But moving on to a little more of a team leadership function, I see that you advocate for speaking with one voice as a platoon leadership team. I'll tell you what, I definitely struggled with that sometimes as a young PL. I thought that it was my way or the highway, learned the hard way that that was not the case. Can you speak to why speaking with a unified voice is critical to the climate of the platoon and how a platoon leader can foster that type of relationship?
Yeah, I think this is really more important for the platoon sergeant as well, because as a sergeant first class, you know, this is the first time you've really ever been in charge, and you have that same dynamic with the, new lieutenant platoon leader. And it is critical because you have soldiers and squad leaders that may try to drive a wedge or play mommy and daddy, whichever one's nicer. And if the platoon sergeant, platoon leader can demonstrate a respect and a trust through their actions, speaking with one voice, even though they may not necessarily agree with what is being said, that will set the proper culture within the platoon for the soldiers to follow, because they know that there isn't a, well, let me wait for the PL to go on leave, or let me wait for Sergeant Follis to go on leave, and then I'll get what I need or get this paperwork signed or whatever they want done. And really, it takes professionalism on both sides, you know, to be behind closed doors. And that's kind of, you have to be proactive with that and kind of understand, because the platoon leader may not understand why things are done a certain way. Every unit does things differently based off of post rules, regulations, or how the unit has historically done things. So the platoon sergeant should be that institutional knowledge, and it may be just something as simple as, hey, Sergeant, what are your thoughts on this? I'm going to brief the company commander. I just want to run it by you first to make sure it makes sense. Or tomorrow, can we discuss a plan for the field problem? And, you know, it works both ways. The platoon sergeant, depending on the relationship, can be like, sir, I know tomorrow you're briefing the, you know, our concept of support for the upcoming field problem. Do you want me to go over it? And just having that kind of relationship behind closed doors, the soldiers and squad leaders don't need to see coming to blows. But once the door is opened, it is critical that decision is made by the PL and that everybody is okay with it. And the one more benefit is that if you are discussing it, then the platoon sergeant has a much better understanding of the plan and will be better able to execute it or give directions when the PL is not around.
Do you think that sort of dynamic changes at all with a prior service platoon leader?
It can. I've never worked with a prior service platoon leader, and I've heard horror stories about how he never left the chevrons off, or I've heard excellent stories where he knew what his responsibilities were as a sergeant first class, so he knew where his responsibilities as a platoon leader were and where they shouldn't be, if that makes any sense.
I think it makes a lot of sense. In fact, I remember vividly the pressure I felt as a new lieutenant that everything my unit did or failed to do was my responsibility. To that idea where you were just talking about, what would you say to those who argue that there is not NCO business and there's not officer business, but everything is leader business?
I'm going to maybe fudge a little bit on that. Everything is leader business. However, the start of the third paragraph of the non-commissioned officer creed says that officers of my unit will have maximum time to accomplish their duties. They will not have to accomplish mine. So with the NCO creed being what should be the core of every non-commissioned officer's value set, there's already a distinction there between officer and enlisted. And I'm not going to say that there's never a time when it crosses over, but a platoon leader has more than enough tasks than, you know, planning future training, resourcing training, attending meetings where they are advocating for our platoon, that they should not be worried about what discipline Private Snuffy, who showed up 5 minutes late for formation, is going to face. And I think that if we have a continuum where it's like late for formation to DUI or being arrested, you know, the late to formation, generally the PL doesn't need to know about that. But the DUI or anything that he's going to get a phone call from his boss about, I need to let him know before his boss does. So that is kind of my fudge leader officer business. But it really, the platoon leader needs to have the trust to know that if I think it's going to need your assistance to in the resolution of it, then I'm going to let you know. And I can't sit down with a list of every silly thing a soldier is going to do, because truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and you have no idea what a soldier is going to do. So to have like a CCIR framework for that is not really realistic. It's just a, you know, kind of a trust. And I know when I was a platoon sergeant, there were a couple issues where we had one big office for our platoon, and there were a couple times soldiers wanted to talk to me, and I had to kindly ask my platoon leader to leave, because it was NCO business, and I let him know as he was leaving that if it was important, sir, I would let you know, but I'm going to handle this and see what, you know, it is, because the platoon sergeant has a deeper relationship with the soldiers than the platoon leader. So there's some of that dynamic at play, but at no time would I willingly withhold information from my platoon leader if he asked. I would give it to him, maybe not right then, but that's kind of my concept between the NCO and officer business.
I like it, you know, kind of a time and a place for every discussion and learning when that is. You mentioned, and we spent a little bit of time on discipline as one primary NCO lane. Is there another lane where you've seen new platoon leaders commonly drift into?
The only other area where I've really seen friction between platoon leaders and like NCOs is in the task accomplishment, like in the field problem. People wanting it done a certain way or by a certain time. And that's just a function of competing priorities. And it goes back to speaking with one voice, because security is primary, at least when I've set up field problems, you know, always do security first. And there may be competing priorities with, you know, running a log pack and not really having the experience to know which is more important, may be another area where a lieutenant would kind of drift into that business, or telling them how to do a task, which that's it. They do platoon leaders develop training plan, and the platoon sergeant and squad leaders, they execute it. And if there's a problem with that, then the platoon leader should find the platoon sergeant to find out why before he fixes the problem.
So now that we've talked about speaking with one voice, let's talk about the concept that you sent us earlier about the fact on stewardship. And you had one of your principles was that this is our platoon, not yours, being your as a platoon leader. So understanding that the platoon leaders want to get a lot done in their 12 to 18 months if they're lucky as a PL, can you speak to me a little more about what you meant by this is our platoon and not yours?
At first, I think it goes back to the speaking with one voice, that if it's ours, then we speak with one voice as the leadership team. But if it's your platoon, then we're not a team. And that may, I just might be splitting a semantic hair, but that's how I feel. And it kind of viewing the platoon as yours, in my opinion, it makes it more of a, this is your check block for the next rank or the next position, not a, you really care about this platoon and you want to make it better because you care about the people. And it may just be a small thing, but I believe that kind of semantic difference matters, that wording matters. And I just, from my experience, like having a good relationship with that platoon leader who does leave, You know, NCOs, the enlisted, we're great at waiting out officers because they'll come in with a brand new idea and we know they'll be gone in 18 months. So we can wait because we'll be there and we have the bureaucratic inertia on our side. But just when the platoon leader leaves and goes to another job within a battalion, having a good relationship with that platoon can really help them out later on. Like if they're a S3 or S4 and they forget something in the tasking, they have that good relationship with the platoon sergeant that can make their mistake kind of disappear to where the mission still gets accomplished and nobody needs to know they forgot something. And the last point I'm going to make is that as I talk to a lot of officers throughout my career, the ones that I consider the best officers, they still have a relationship with their first platoon sergeant, even though he probably retired 10 years ago just based off of the time and service requirement, that they still, he's still a mentor or maybe a trusted counselor. And I don't want to say that every platoon sergeant is the best because we get almost no formal training on what it is we're supposed to do with a new platoon leader, other than if our platoon leader messes up, it's our fault. So.
On your last point, as far as formal training, during our interview on episode 11 with Sergeant Major Hood, he kind of talked about that. Is there's not a lot of discussions as far as in the NCO professional development circles of how to intentionally develop your new PL. But I think you guys learned through the experience because of, like you said, you guys have the inertia, the ability to be patient and work with multiple officers. But I want to challenge you a little bit on understanding that you may have the bureaucratic inertia. How can we switch that to actually co-creating some goals and vision for the platoon for that 12, 18 months that PL and platoon sergeant are paired up? Because ultimately, as a steward of a unit, stewarding resources, people, time, money, equipment, the goal should be to leave the organization better than you received it. So how can you do that? How can you establish that relationship and go forward to ultimately develop the team?
Yeah, I hope I didn't sound too pessimistic about the bureaucratic inertia. I think just being a frank and having a good initial discussion with your platoon sergeant, where you have gotten, or the platoon leader has gotten, their counseling from their company commander with his areas of emphasis, and then working with the platoon sergeant and that initial counseling, if the PL is rating the platoon sergeant, depending on what unit, is different. But having a shared vision and agreed upon goals that are realistic, because if a young platoon leader doesn't really know what's realistic, he may overcommit. And a good platoon sergeant should be able to give him a realistic framework for things. You know, if the platoon leader's goal is for everybody to get a 300 in 3 months, but there's a 45-day field problem upcoming, it's not really a realistic goal, and that platoon sergeant can kind of help, I guess, give a decent azimuth check for the platoon leader. But it comes back to speaking, I think, with one voice and, you know, just having good, open, frank discussion between the platoon leader and the platoon sergeant.
Great. Thank you very much. You know, you mentioned a great segue into my next topic, which is that of trust. I often, as a commander, counseled my newest platoon leaders to trust their NCO's experience, to trust their counsel. On your side, what does that trust mean to you? I tell my platoon leader, trust your NCO. What does that trust mean to the platoon sergeant? And then after you've described that, maybe work in how do you use that trust to coach lieutenants on effective delegation of tasks and prioritization of mission and resources?
Well, trust is critical to the relationship. It is also, I think, one of the most important fundamentals of mission command. And if a lieutenant trusts me, and this may be my own kind of prerogative, but you know, I am a Sergeant First Class in the United States Army. My word matters. You know, I didn't just get this rank, I earned it. So when I say something, it matters. So if there is, I guess, like going around seeing if really what I said matter, I get trust but verify. But if I don't feel trusted, then it really doesn't matter. And I don't have any real personal experience because all my lieutenants, I trusted, they trusted me. So I can't really speak to not being trusted. And that comes to delegation. If I say I'm going to do something or, you know, it's the nature of the platoon leader's position is that they have to delegate for the platoon to be successful. You have to be able to trust their NCOs to help them out as necessary. Because I know that a new lieutenant gets a lot of battalion level taskers and all kinds of other development tasks in addition to the day-to-day running of the platoon. So if they need help, you know, picking a spot for the next battalion hail and farewell, you know, maybe that's something I can do, the platoon sergeant or their squad leader can do. It's that open relationship. And hopefully it's not adversarial, you know, and like you can tell when people are having a bad day and like, sir, do you need help with this? And it goes the other reverse too, that I may need help writing an order, writing an NCOER, or some other mundane administrative task that the platoon leader can help me out with. And some of the delegating the big tasks, that comes with building the trust. You know, like, I remember when I first went to, Iraq in 2004, the platoon leader had to go on every convoy. And then they realized that he had no time to do anything else because we left the wire 6 days a week. So then it just kind of went, well, the platoon leader or the platoon sergeant have to be on the convoy. And then they were gone too much. And then it was, well, if you're a staff sergeant, you can run the convoys. And just kind of broke its way down based off of people's experience. And there was a little certification we had to do. But, you know, realizing that, you know, delegating will help you achieve your goals. And allow for better time management. You know, if it's a high-risk operation, maybe it requires the platoon leader to be there to supervise. If it's more regular resupply mission or something like that, everybody needs a break, and the platoon leader should, you know, be able to trust his platoon sergeant, squad leaders, or however their brigade, battalion, has it set up for who can be in charge when they leave the wire, even if it's not a combat mission. You know, is it more important that the platoon leader be there? Because ultimately they are responsible for everything. But what is he missing or she not doing to be there that he or she should be doing? And that's where that trust to know that this squad leader has it, you know, specialist so-and-so has this task and he's got it. You know, I'm going to be here if you need anything, but you know, that kind of delegating down and prioritizing and delegating kind of go hand in hand, because if the lieutenant could do everything, they would, just to make sure it got done the right way. But, you know, you can't be the lead vehicle commander, navigate, pull security, provide support by fire, you know, deliver fuel, count the ammo, and be at a command and staff or a company training meeting and get all the awards done on time. So you have to, you know, delegate tasks to people you trust to do them. And I would say that one thing to help with the delegating is that if, you know, you have a, depending on the platoon, either a squad leader, you know, kind of like a mini platoon training meeting where you have, you know, the daily priority, what has to get done that day, and then, you know, what could get done that day with time, and figure out who's doing what. But, and it could just be, you know, hey, sir, don't forget today, we got to get those NCOERs signed. Something like that. Or, hey, sergeant, don't forget so-and-so's PCS award is due. You know, just little things like that so that the platoon is able to accomplish its mission.
I think the summation that I heard out of all of that, that I used as my mantra, certainly as a commander, is do only what you can do. And trying to, and yes, acknowledging some of that comes with experience, but knowing that if the platoon leader is the only person who can plan that mission, that's where he's got to be, he or she's got to be. And therefore, it means the platoon sergeant and leaders on down the chain can take on, must take on, additional responsibilities in order for the unit to still accomplish its mission. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, sir. That is a much more succinct version of what I was trying to get across, I think.
This is Captain Ward again. It reminds me of a blog post recently that was up on the Military Leader blog about knowing your role in your organization. I think that's incredibly important. And you know, like I was that very Type A, hard charging PL that wanted to get everything done, and learning delegation to down to even the team leader level and getting them opportunities to teach Iraqis certain skills and tasks and giving them experience was something I had to learn myself and let the leash go a little bit. So thanks for bringing up that topic as far as trust. And going into our last question, I'd like to close out, I'd like to ask you to close out for our listeners a few recommendations you may have for the junior listeners and out there for other resources, whether it's podcasts, books, blogs, any other sort of resource you can think of onto learning more about preparing for being a platoon leader, building an effective platoon team, and then having a strong relationship with their platoon sergeant.
All right. Well, two blogs that really come to mind, themilitaryleader.com and fromthegreennotebook.com. I know Colonel Stedman is really big on team development, leadership development, and his blog posts always end with questions, what can you do with your team, or, you know, how that post can relate, you can internalize that post. And I'm going to maybe go a little non-traditional, and I don't know, Jorg Muth's book on command culture really does a really good historical comparison between the German and American officer selection and training up in the period before World War II. And there is a lot of good information in there, and it is all predicated about trust and the commander's intent. And I think that would be beneficial for lieutenants, young lieutenants to read. And then I'm going to plug two more books. One is The Art of Leadership by Chris Kalinda. He was my squadron commander at the time, and it is a edited compilation of a lot of good little articles on leadership. And I think one that will really help a young platoon leader with how he's perceived is how by Dove Seidman, I think I got the name right, and it really talks about how we do things is much more important than what we're doing, because it is really easy to destroy a team if how we are accomplishing our task is destructive. And I learned a lot when I read it or read it, and I recommend it. And then I would say that the Branch magazine, whatever, Infantry Armor Sustainment magazine, because their peers are writing articles in there, and it's one way to kind of stay current in your profession. And the last recommendation is to find a mentor, a trusted peer, someone you can turn to when you have a situation that, you know, you weren't prepared to encounter, and you're not quite sure the proper way to do it, and you're maybe afraid to talk to your immediate supervisor about it, and you know, it might be another battalion, or you know, another platoon leader, another battalion, or another company. But I would challenge them: don't limit that mentor or peer to another officer. Yeah. Because there could be another senior NCO, your first sergeant, a sergeant major, that could offer just as good advice, because they've probably encountered that situation before. So I hope my recommendations help, and I'm interested to hear feedback on them. Thank you.
Well, that was probably the most extensive list of recommendations I've had on the podcast, so thank you very much for offering all those up. Specifically on the mentor episode, I think it's really interesting that you mentioned, and this is the first time I think I've heard a officer senior NCO potential relationship. And for our listeners, if you want to learn more about specifically mentoring relationships in the Army, check out episode 9 of the Leaders Huddle podcast. We've hosted both Colonel Stedman and Major Byerly from the Military Leader and the Green Notebook, respectively, back in bonus episode number 2. I will include links or information for all those books that Sergeant Kafalis mentioned in the show notes. And definitely check out your branch magazines. They are published either bi-monthly, quarterly, accessed online. And he's got a good point. Sergeant Kafalis got a good point. A lot of young lieutenants and company commanders, they're writing about what their units are doing. It's a great resource to learn, especially for those lieutenants or soon-to-be lieutenants out in the commissioning sources, to learn specifically about what their branch is doing. So to wrap everything up, we'll get in the show notes. Thank you again, Sergeant Foss, for your time. This has been rather enlightening. Really appreciate the time you took to prepare. Thought the discussion was great, and that our young lieutenant listeners will get a lot out of it.
Well, thank you, sir, for having me, and I really hope that at least someone learns something from it, and it makes the Army a better place and builds more cohesive teams. So thank you, sir.
It was definitely our pleasure. Good luck finishing up your degree program and enjoying time down in Virginia. Hopefully it's a little warmer than up in New York. It's like 28 degrees outside.
I think you've got it 1 or 2 degrees warmer than we do.
And we also look forward to any future blog posts you got. I always like reading your stuff. So thanks again. This wraps up today's Leaders Huddle podcast. In the next episode, we take an in-depth look into how to build a fully functional remedial PT program. Specifically, I sit down with a former Army physical therapist to discuss building an effective remedial and conditioning PT program focused on getting soldiers back in the fight and increasing unit readiness. You can connect with us at iTunes, and we're also on the Google Play platform. We want to hear from you, our listeners, on the topics you would like us to discuss, so please leave a comment on iTunes or through the CALDO sponsored Facebook page. Until next time, remember that elevating your performance and unleashing your potential as a leader takes intentionality and the humility to learn from others. The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.